Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Help Myself podcast. Listen, I am your host, John M. Singletary Sr. I've got to put that senior in there because I got my junior, aka LJ. That's my co-pilot in this crazy podcasting game and in this thing called life. It's such an honor. And once again, we are coming to you with another history-making woman. Self-actualizing, breaking down the barriers, crashing through the glass ceilings, and being an inspiration to us all. Listen, in our first episode of the month with Naima Ford Goldson, the word women's history, or the phrase Women History Month, was kicking my tail. But we had an amazing interview with her. And then last week, the amazing matchless Tammy Triolo. And this week we are going to definitely keep that going. I was so excited to be able to find some time to get on her schedule. And so this week we are going to have an interview with producer, director, showrunner extraordinaire, Sy Stewart, AKA Sy Savvy.
On this journey, my goal was to tell stories. I want to tell stories of women whose voices are often muted, sometimes eclipsed by the
sound. It's about to go down.
In the end, you always remember this is why I dance.
Mama Academy, he started it to create a niche for youth women's basketball and his relationship with his daughter.
Recognizing retiring from basketball being not only a chance to say goodbye to one thing, but hello to another.
To be a legend in a city like Los Angeles, that really shows you the connection that a lot of people in the city and Lakers fans have to him.
For his loved ones, it was just uplift that he was here. And that's heartbreaking.
Sy Stewart, also known as Sy Savvy. I am a director, a producer, and a showrunner. I'm from Oakland, California originally, and I love what I do. I'm a storyteller.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Listen, I know you're seeing her name right there on the bottom of the screen, and I promise you, you are saying it wrong. But today, we are excited to have Sy Stewart, aka Sy Savvy. Let me give y'all a really quick high-level introduction, then I'll let her introduce herself, and we'll see how she's doing and what she's been up to, because she's been up to a lot. But Sy Stewart, also known as Sy Savvy, she's a highly accomplished, let me make sure I put some extra stank on that, highly accomplished television producer, director, and showrunner hailing from the Oak Town, Oakland, California. She's got her bachelor's degree in media management from Columbia College in Chicago, and she furthered her academic endeavors by securing an MBA in finance, the money, y'all, from Morehead State University. She started out, you know, a thriving corporate career, corporate accountant, senior project manager across multiple Fortune 500 companies. But you know what? Although she enjoyed it, she had that itch. She decided to pursue her true passion, television production. She began her television career in the true crime genre. I don't know what it is about y'all ladies in true crime. But she was a contributor to hit shows such as TV1's For My Man, Fatal Attraction, Payback, Sins of the City, and Oxygen's gripping snapped behind bars. I feel a little scared. I'm clutching my pearls. Expanding her repertoire, she ventured into VH1's reality TV sensation, Black Ink Crew, and several other prominent network programs. However, it was her pivotal roles as showrunners for ESPN's compelling docuseries, Why Not Us, Southern Dance, and Why Not Us, Grambling Dance. And listen, I personally tell you, you got to check those out. They're amazing. And along with her directorial finesse in the Tubi original documentary series Sneaker Hustle, Presumed Dead, and the poignant and powerful Gone Before His Time, the Kobe Bryant story, her trajectory has been solidified in the industry. Now, today, as we're talking, we want to talk about the leap of faith that she took in 2020 to found Savvy Media Group. It's a powerhouse production company staffed with writers, producers, directors, videographers, and an ensemble of dedicated industry professionals fueled by commitment to excellence. She's passionate about amplifying the narratives of women and individuals from diverse backgrounds and fostering pathways for aspiring talents and promoting inclusivity. Did I get it all?
You got it all. I have never heard my whole bio read. So, well done. I'm like, who is he talking about?
Thank you. Did I do well enough? Was that a reason I can get a job?
Use this for a screen test. Absolutely.
I'm saying, you know, so I'm trying to get out there and get famous.
I love
so it. So what's going on, Ms. Saya Stewart? How are you?
I am good. Thank you so much for, you know, just having me here with you today.
The honor's all ours. And listen, look, man, we got a real live producer up in here. You know what I'm saying? You know, we got our little in-home. We are proud of our in-home capabilities, but it is amazing to have you on. I'm so thankful that you were willing to accept the invitation to come on and, you know, really talk about your journey so we could spotlight you, a woman that is making history right now today on Women's History Month. So thank you for taking the invite. Really appreciate that. So let's talk. So I did my introduction. Is there anything I left out or anything else that you would like to tell the people about yourself?
Well, like I said, I have not heard my bio read out loud, so that was actually a joy. Thank you. No, man, I think you covered it. You know, I'm just, you know, from Oakland, California, and someone that really loves telling stories. You know, I ventured into television production, you know, later in life, and I think that's an important thing to note, because a lot of times we tend to believe that, you know, we're too old to make certain transitions and to follow.
Right.
Yeah. And so I love to share that part of my journey so that if there's anyone else thinking like, hey, I'm in my mid-30s or I'm in my late 30s or, you know, even early 40s, like, hey, I can't make this jump. Yes, you can. Let me be the one to tell you that.
She gonna come up here talking about people thinking they're too old, and she looking all of 22, 23 years old. So
today, but
hey, you know what I'm saying?
I got a few rings around this tree stuff.
Hey, I hear you on that. But okay, so that's what got you into it. So let's talk about what you've had going on. We've been watching on your socials. You've had some pretty big things going on here. Obviously, I'm interested in how you got your start specifically, but man, we got to get to the big stuff. You just got back from Johannesburg, South Africa. Come on, talk to us about that.
I did. So I was a director for a documentary called Gone Before His Time. It was Kobe Bryant's story. And it was a really, really amazing project that I'm just really excited. I was excited to work on and just very proud of. You know, there's certain things we do because we're paid to do it. And there's certain things you work on that you just really, that speak to your soul and that you're really proud of. And the Kobe Bryant story was definitely one of those projects for me. And the documentary was actually featured at the Johannesburg Film Festival this year. And so they had two screenings. They, you know, really rolled out. The film itself was very well received. The people at JFF, the Johannesburg Film Festival, rolled out the red carpet. And it was just such an amazing experience. It was so great to be there and see all of these just prominent Black storytellers, all of these prominent producers, directors, filmmakers from all over the world, just kind of congregating here at this festival in South Africa. And so it was just, it was amazing. Like, it was so inspiring, just so inspiring.
So you're going to hit us with the, yeah, I just got invited. But man, from what I was reading on your social posts, it sounds to me like you had some duties while you were there.
That I did. No, I spoke on a panel that was talked about sports programming. I actually also spoke about with Denham Richards about just the actual, you know, African Americans coming back to the continent and the business and the financial opportunities that are available. I actually also spoke at after the film school there and had an opportunity to speak with some of the students, you know, in a workshop, just, you know, encouraging them and giving them insight on the best ways to tell their authentic stories. And so, yeah, I did all that while I was there as well. And it was pretty cool, actually.
Y'all see that? She's got this super sparkly resume. And, you know, yeah, I get up there and be like, hey, what'd you do? Oh, I was just there, you know, just a little film about a guy y'all might know, Kobe Bryant. You know, maybe y'all heard of him, maybe you haven't, I don't know. You know, being all the humility, I appreciate that. But I'm telling you, that's first off, Johannesburg. Second, the film festival. Third, your film was screened twice. Fourth, you were on panels, you were presenting, you were meeting, you were talking and teaching and reaching, all that good stuff. Listen, those are some bars. That's a full 16 right there. You know?
it was definitely the interesting thing about it was it's like you feel like you're on stage because, you know, people are really interested in the film and they, you know, they're asking questions about, you know, the production quality, the you know, just the concepts and the thought process behind making the film. But it was also very humbling because I came there to speak, but I also learned so much from all the people that I was able to encounter. You know, I learned from the students, I learned from the questions that the people asked, you know, in the audience. And then just meeting all these just amazing filmmakers from different parts of different countries on the continent of Africa. I mean, they just really, it was just such a full experience. I felt like I got an education while I was there.
Hey, for real. Seriously. So obviously we want to talk about the reason why you were in, well, one of the reasons, a big reason why you were there, the Kobe documentary. And again, like I said, you just kind of went over there like, yeah, I did a little documentary. It's a big deal. Talk to us about that Kobe documentary. I mean, like, what was your experience like? I know you feel great about it, but tell us about it.
So Gone Before Its Time really focused on, I mean, the parts of his story that we don't talk enough about, or that, you know, most people who are huge Laker fans or huge Kobe fans can tell you his stats. They can tell you how many points he made in different games, his career highlights. But the things that we don't hear enough about are the things that really made Kobe just a full person, a holistic human being. And that was really one of the things that I wanted to focus on. The production company that put this on is called Streetcar Entertainment. And when they, you know, reached out to me and asked, like, hey, we'd love to have you come on and assist us to bring this vision to life. What I loved about, you know, some of the executive team over there and what they wanted is they wanted to know who Kobe was, not just the athlete, but the father, the friend, the person. Like, that was what they were hoping to create. And I just was so happy to hear that and was definitely happy to be on board. And so, you know, we had the pleasure of, or I had the pleasure of interviewing people that were very close to him and just learning his story. And it was a lot because there's so much I heard all these great stories that I'd never heard of before. All know that Kobe supported women's basketball, right? He was, you know, an advocate. He was always very vocal. And, you know, there's this narrative that, you know, he kind of started that when his daughter began to play basketball, but that's absolutely untrue. Like, Kobe has been a fan of women's basketball since, you know, he was a young person in Italy, and his best friend was Tamika Catchings. And, you know, some of his friends even said that, you know, Kobe came back from Italy and was like, yo, she would bust your ass if y'all played against her. Like, don't come for her. Like, she, you know, y'all don't got hands like she does. And like, he was always supportive of women's sports, period, and women athletes. And I think one of the things that people don't know is he really moved the needle. He wasn't just someone that thought women's basketball was okay. He was someone that moved the needle in their exposure. You know, Kobe was seen often wearing the orange WNBA sweatshirt, you know, sitting courtside at various games. And, you know, we had a young lady from Nike who worked at Nike that explained that when Kobe started wearing those sweatshirts, the sales of those sweatshirts went through the roof. And that other NBA players started wearing the sweatshirts, and that his influence in that, like, you know, that's something that can be, it's one thing to say, oh yeah, you wore something and this arbitrary idea of your influence, you know, it's another when you can put dollars and cents to that, you know.
Facts.
You know what I'm saying? Numbers to that. So when we have this woman from Nike saying, when Kobe started to wear that sweatshirt and be seen wearing it, like, the sales went up, and that shirt went from something that could have been pulled off of the website to being a number one seller. And so that is that's a dollars and cents, you know, calculation of his influence. Like, we can see, you know, the pull. And I love to be, and there were many, that was just one story, right? There were many stories like that where he used his platform and his influence to make sure that women athletes, you know, not even just basketball players, were given the respect that they deserve. And it was just so important to me to tell that part of his story.
So that's a huge project. This is a huge name. A huge effort. So when people watch this documentary, what is the big, one of the, at least one of the big takeaways that you would like for people to take from watching this documentary?
That Kobe was, I think sometimes with athletes, especially like our superstars, right? The ones that we consider them subhuman. We call them, we use terms like, you know, this person is a freak of nature, or, you know, all these things. We forget that they are human. Like, you know, they are flawed, that they are, you know, that they were once young people. And so Kobe was somebody that literally we watched this young man grow up right before our eyes. We watched him grow up on television. And so I want people to watch it and walk away from it knowing that he was not this super athlete or superhuman athlete only. I mean, yes, he was good, but Kobe earned every shot. Like, Kobe worked harder than anybody else. His greatness was not just this God-given talent that emerged without effort. And it just wasn't. Like, Kobe had this a God-given talent, of course, but he worked really hard to become as great as he was. And that just wasn't all there was to him, though. And so I hope that people can watch it and see that, you know, this is a man who loved his family, he loved his children. And I would love to remind people that we watched him become a man right before our eyes.
That's strong. Yeah. We forget because we think about Mamba mentality and the Kobe, that, but there were so many layers. Like, people forgot Kobe was rapper. Kobe, you know, Kobe felt like an outsider when he first got to Philly because he grew up in Italy. Like, you know, people forget, you know, everything they went through. So that's awesome. It's awesome, man. When's it coming out?
The documentary actually dropped January 26th. And so we...
it already dropped?
Yeah, it already dropped.
The
network released it on the anniversary of his death, in remembrance of him, of course, and the other people who were on the flight with him. And so it was just, like I said, Kobe was also a poet. Like, he was also an artist, and he was also, you know, he did so much. Go watch it. You'll see.
Y'all go watch it. Where can we watch it?
It is a Tubi original, so you can on Tubi originals. Yes,
y'all are already watching Tubi, so y'all might as well.
Y'all be watching Tubi, but now Tubi has the original. They has a new arm where it's there, where they're creating their own content, and so it's the original content side.
Y'all go check it out. Me and LJ gonna check that out tonight. So I didn't know it was already out. You know, I'm thinking it's premiering. So shame on us. I should have watched it, man. Shame on me, but. Trust me. By the time y'all are watching this podcast, I will be done watched it and posted about it. I'll be live tweeting everything. You know,
awesome. I love it. Thank you.
Yeah. So, what else you got going on? I'm hearing a little birdie telling me about Sneaker Hustle.
Sneaker Hustle. Yes. So, Sneaker Hustle was another Tubi original. It's a documentary really highlighting the just the sneaker industry, right? You had all these, there's so many people that created this sneaker culture. Like, it's a big thing now. You got Jordans, you got, you know, just so many different brands. Like, I couldn't even begin to go down and name them all. But in addition to having all of these people that are sneaker enthusiasts, you have a lot of young people that have created a whole culture, a whole subculture. They've created businesses. And the title Sneaker Hustle is authentic and real because it's a hustle. Like, a lot of them are out here hustling, you know, sneakers.
Oh, yeah, it's a hustle.
You would be surprised the level of creativity that a lot of the young people have shown just in how they've developed their sneaker businesses. So that's one part of it. But we can't talk about Sneaker Hustle or sneaker culture without also talking about the hard side of it too. And I know that's the part that, you know, the darker side of it that, you know, a lot of people like to avoid. You know, a lot of young people were hurt in the 90s when...
What? That was a normal thing to get shot over some Jordans back in the 90s.
Yeah, and so we talked a little bit about that. We also talked about this, you know, in addition to some of the things that happened, you know, in the inner cities, there were so many different crimes that took place in time, like white-collar crime. There were... many executives that worked at these different large companies that were doing some pretty off-brand things as it
like
relates. Well, I don't want to give it away yet, but the major heist that took place around sneakers, and it just, you know, accentuates how big of a deal this sneaker culture became. You know, it was, you know, it was big money, you know,
yeah.
Big money. And a lot of major incidents took place, and our goal was to cover and show as much of it as we could.
Are you just gonna put that out there and be like, yeah, you gotta watch it, you gotta watch
it. You gotta watch it. I can't take it away. But there, you know, shout out to Cheech the Don, and Scrams. These are two brothers from New York that literally were so important to the making of this documentary. They gave us access to a world that we would not have had access without
the right
I cannot do this. I cannot mention this film without, you know, definitely giving those two brothers their props and my gratitude.
There you go. They took you behind the little secret staircases, behind the bookcase, and to the secret lab. the little speakeasy where you sit at a table, then you knock on the door, and then somebody comes from behind the curtain, and you drink a potion, and poof.
That's exactly what they did, man. Especially, you know, this brother Cheech. He is this guy that everybody says, you know, you hear like, I got a guy, right? He's the guy that got a guy.
Oh, he's the guy.
Yeah, he's the guy that got a guy for everything. And I was told that when I was introduced to him, but, you know, I didn't believe it until I met him. I was like, yo, he literally has a guy for everything. And, you know, he just has so much respect, you know, in that particular world. So, yeah, every time I was like, hey, you know, we'll find different industries or different businesses that were related to the sneaker culture. And he's like, oh, yeah, I got a guy. Well, I'll get you an interview. I'm like, great.
Okay.
Yeah. Shout out Cheech.
Now the big question we want to know. Wait, first question is Cheech your guy now? Like, can you call him when you need some?
Well, look, I definitely call Cheech every time I needed a new interview. That is for sure. He was able to make that happen.
Yeah. And another question. Are you a sneakerhead?
I don't think it's fair for me to call. Now that I know the depth of the sneaker.
Some people like shoes and they think they're sneakerhead, but a sneakerhead,
it's a different situation. Yeah, I would never ever call myself a sneakerhead at this point. However, I do love sneakers. I love shoes, period. That's probably, you know, I'm Syed. I have a problem. I love shoes. I need to but a true sneakerhead is not just someone who collects shoes or just likes them. These are people that are really invested in the history of them, the stories behind the shoes. And
yeah,
these shoes have stories. Like, you don't even know them until you talk
to them. They will tell you, hey, this specific shoe so-and-so wore it in this game this year. And but I'll be like, dang. You know, they just look like a pair of Jordan 9s to me. They're like, no, this is the certain one. I'll be like, whoa. So, no, yeah. I'm not a sneakerhead. I like shoes, but I'm not a sneakerhead. But yeah. It's fascinating. I love to hear the stories.
Oh, it was so I loved working on that project because it was so fascinating. Like, I just hadn't, when you hear some of the stories of the things that happen, you know, and oh my God, it's very interesting to see people talk about their love for sneakers and then all the stories that go behind it.
And that's awesome. I'm gonna check that one out too, man, and be like, hey, Cheech, I know somebody that knows somebody that know you. Let's get to the heavy stuff though. Okay. As a woman in the entertainment industry, and we see we've seen women represented inequitably in front of the camera for years, decades, since the beginning. But we know that those inequities go even deeper and they're more entrenched and more universal when we talk about women in the entertainment industry behind the camera, especially like where you work. Can you kind of walk us through that struggle, kind of your passion and the barriers that still exist in, you know, things of that nature in the entertainment industry?
Absolutely. So this is a very male-dominated business. And like you said, it always has been from the beginning. You know, one of the things that I am very passionate about and love discussing is, you know, we talk about diversity and inclusion. And that is, you know, making sure that there's representation for people of color and for women. But the reality is, too often we're not talking about what that inclusion actually looks like and what, you know, actual diversity and inclusion looks like. And what we hear is, you know, or what we see, should I say, is a lot of major studios, networks, and production companies willing to hire people of color and women at the lower levels. you know, at, you know, as producers, as researchers, as bookers, you know, and things of that nature. But as you go up to the executive level, so that when we talk about executive producers and, you know, network executives and so on and so forth, the diversity and the representation doesn't live there. It's like, we'll hire, you know, 10 people here on this level and then none here. And then that becomes, well, we hired 10 people, we hired, you know, 10 women, or we hired 10 people of color, so we're now both diverse and inclusive. And it's like, well, no, you only hire people at this, you know, at this lower level, which means all of the decision makers are still, you know, the same. And we're not seeing representation at those higher levels, at those decision-making levels. And what that looks like is when we're creating content, while yes, you may have a woman or person of color creating content, you're then still answering to, you know, older white men to what part of our culture or what part of our content is relevant based on their perceptions. And too often we just don't see enough of ourselves in those decision-making positions, in those executive level positions, to make sure that our content and our voices and our opinions are really being heard in the ways that they should be.
Absolutely, absolutely. They put 10 people in the office, but the people that are still making the decisions and charting the directions of projects, of movies, of industries, organizations, they still look the same, they think the same, they feel the same. So that's definitely so. So let's package a question here. So when we're talking about the old guard and the decision makers, I'll ask you, what does true representation look like? And you kind of touched on that, talking about having diverse people actually in the decisionary process, but not only what true representation looks like, but where you are positioned in the fight and the things that you're having to face and the fights and the battles that you are actually a part of. How do we get there to a place where we can really get true representation?
That's such a loaded question. because the reality is there's no one path. You know, I think a lot of what we're seeing, you know, which, you know, what I talked about Tubi Originals. I mean, one of the things that we've seen is that Tubi started, became the phenomenon that it is, or the cultural phenomenon that it's become, because of all the independent filmmakers. And, you know, we may, you know, of course, there's always jokes about, you know, the quality of the independent films, but those, and I'll leave it there, but those independent films is what made Tubi as big as it is now. Like, they drove the numbers up to the point where, you know, Fox Network, who owns Tubi, decided like, hey, this, we're making money off of this. We need to invest in building this. And so that then opened the door for, you know, Tubi Originals to even become, you know, a part of that platform. And so I said all that to say that, you know, as we think about how do we get greater representation, I think one of the ways that I'm seeing it happen is that a lot of, you know, people of color and women are choosing to play outside of the system. A lot of them are deciding to create their own production companies and then license their content, you know, produce their own content and then license it to networks and studios and things of that nature. There are people who are fighting on the inside. You know, there are women and people of color who work within the system, you know, within the networks and within the studios, who are using their influence and the positions that they have gained to constantly fight the battle to make sure that inclusion is something that is considered, and to try to, you know, bring in more talented and qualified people of color and women, you know, into those positions. And it's a constant battle. And so what I believe is that we need both. We need people willing to fight within the system to push the needle forward. We also need those who play outside of the system, who build the tables that we can come sit at without having to beg for a seat. All of those elements combined will put us in a position where we can see the representation that we desperately want to see.
Ooh, yeah. You know what? I didn't mean to get so excited, but you said a word. Me and a partner of mine, we always talk about what our communities and what our industries look like prior to us wanting the acceptance of, you know, the major mainstream industries. And, you know, we know that they consistently come and steal our swag, our ideas, our creativity, and all that, and just the power of doing a thing on our own. So that everything you said, but you know, I got super excited about that part because I'm just really like, look, man, we need to go in and build it. If we build it, like Fields of Dream, they will come. You know what I'm saying?
I'm sorry, I didn't cut you off. Yes,
if
you
build,
definitely come, and they continue to come over and over again. Every time we build something and we invest in ourselves and we invest in our content and our creativity, then it always becomes marketable. It always becomes something that then everyone else wants to capitalize on. You know, i.e. hip hop. So, and everything and all the derivatives of hip hop. So, one of the catchphrases I learned in South Africa. They said nothing else about us without us. I know. I love that. One of the organizations down there, you know, coined that. It's like nothing else about us without us. And I was like, I want that on a t-shirt because reality is, you know, as people of color, like we have got to figure out a way to stop allowing our stories to be told without stories about us to be told without us.
Exactly. Yeah. Look, I know I've taken up a lot of your time. You know, you're very busy, but we can't let a girl from the town come in and not talk about the town, the place where a lot of my favorite athletes, Damon Lillard, Marshawn Lynch, GP, you know, all these amazing people. Should I mention them? I'm a Too Short fan. Listen, well, I'm back. I go back from the 80s. But you know, we can't have somebody from the town not talk about town business. You know, what was it like growing up in Oakland and how does it inspire you just in everything, but especially the things that you're doing?
So, yes, I am from East Oakland, California. That is such a big part of who I am, you know, and it is, and I have to admit, it's a big part of the lens that I see the world through, you know. Oakland was a beautiful place growing up, you know. I cry now to see how much my city has changed, but you know, there were, I think it's a very diverse city. Like we always had, you know, there's a large Ethiopian population, a large Filipino population, a large Latino population, and so you have all of these amazing cultures blending into one place, you know, blending in one place. And it just allowed for so much cultural creativity, I believe. And of course, you know, we had things that are gone now, unfortunately, like Festival at the Lake and just Lake Merritt was this meeting point for people. Where, you know, just on any given Saturday, you can just be down at the lake and you never know, and you don't know who you're gonna run into. And, you know, there's people out there playing music, doing capoeira, and like this is just an average, any given Sunday or any given, you know, Saturday, or you're walking down Telegraph Avenue and, you know.
But I didn't know y'all knew this. Like, what y'all know about capoeira? I got a bunch of friends that do that, man. I'm like, it will never be me.
There are always people in the Bay Area that, you know, you'll see, you know, just practicing out, you know, in the open down by the lake. And when I think about the influence that growing up in Oakland has had on me, you know, I can't go without mentioning, you know, it's very, very rich in culture as it relates to not just the many cultures that exist in that city, but also, you know, in revolution, you know, the Black Panther, it was the home of the Black Panthers. It is a place where if we don't like it, we will protest and get ready, you know, play with us if you want to. We will protest. It is, you know, and that root lives in so many of us, you know, that root of revolution, that root of saying that if this is unfair, if something is, if we believe something to be unfair or oppressive, that we will fight. We fight against it. We fight for what's right. And I think that also is a big part of the way I produce content. And that is, you know, I was raised to believe that if something is unfair, you speak up and you speak out. And so when I think of the content that I produce that means the most to me, it is usually things that have a social activism ingrained in it.
This is facts, y'all. Listen, she got some stuff. I said, this is facts. You got some stuff where people is killing people and stuff, you know. But listen, man, I'm telling you, I was just so impressed by Why Not Us and the way those stories were told and how they were centered. And when you see her work, you really see her passion for us. And I love that, you know, centering the stories of women, centering the stories of people of color, of marginalized groups. And I love that. That's important and it's powerful. And we appreciate you for your dedication to telling those stories and telling them with dignity and honor and respect. So we greatly appreciate that. There's a bunch of questions that I always like to ask, but you know what? I know that I only had you for a certain amount of time, the calendar and the schedule, but before you go,
okay.
Can you give us like your motto, your mantra for life, and give us some parting thoughts to carry with us?
Oh, wow. Okay. Mantra for life. That one, I would say anything that has value has purpose. I'm sorry. Anything that, I said that wrong. Can I start over? Scratch.
She said, let me start over. Edit it. No, I'm not going to edit it. We're going to leave it like this.
Edit it. You have to freak and bite that thing. Okay. I would say my mantra for life is anything that has balance has purpose. And so I really, really strive to, and it's a struggle for me. Let me just be honest about that. But I strive to be as balanced as possible. What I mean by that is, you know, it's easy to get super consumed in one part of your life and not the other, especially for me, because work can be very consuming. But I really, really strive at this stage in my life to create balance in my life and know that that balance is purposeful and will allow me to really do better, you know, create greater purpose in my life. So I try to make sure that, you know, even if I'm, you know, fully, you know, have a demanding project, that I'm still taking time to spend time with family or to spend time with friends or just really just spend time with myself, you know, spend time praying and communing with God when I can. And that, you know, I try to create that balance, knowing that balance will further my purpose in life.
Ooh, okay. Okay.
And then my parting words would be, you know, I am, like I said in the beginning, you know, we have in the industry, we have like all of these creative titles, right? You know, all these different titles. But I love storyteller because at the end of the day, whether you're an executive producer, a showrunner, a director, a associate producer, whatever, or story producer, whatever it is, we're all storytellers. And I think that's the one umbrella we all fit in. And so my parting words would be, you know, if you are a storyteller, you know that that's what you love to do. You know that that's your God-given gift. Don't ever think that you're too old to start the journey. You know, just start where you stand. And lastly, you know, if you are a person of color and you have a story to tell, we owe it to ourselves, we owe it to our communities to do everything we can to make sure that we are a part of telling our own stories.
Gotta tell our stories. That's absolutely true. So many of our great stories are being buried with the greats because we refuse to tell and transcribe those stories in any way that we can. That's powerful. So I know after this amazing interview, the people want to know where they can find you.
Well, on Instagram, you can find me as Sia Savvy, SIASAVVY. I also can be found. I have a website, www.savvymediagrp.com. If you're looking for me, you want to see some of the work I've done, those are the places you can find me.
Hey, and that's going to be right there on the bottom of the screen as y'all are watching, because my editing game is on point.
I love it.
Well, thank you so much again for coming and sharing your story with us. And we want to encourage you to keep on telling those stories, keep on making sure those voices are heard. And y'all heard what she said. Go out and tell your story, because your story is important. It's never too late. And we need to hear it. So again, we really want to thank you for spending time with us. And We're honored. So we'll be looking out for, you know, all the new stuff you got coming on. So thank you again. Awesome. And I promise y'all ain't got that name right. It's Sia Stewart.
Everybody calls me Sia, but it's Sia.
There you go.
So thank you for having me. This was so much fun, and I'm really honored to be here. And again, if call me if you want me to come back.
Now, we had such an amazing time, and we are so appreciative that Sia was able to take some time out of her busy schedule to come and be with us here on the Help Myself podcast. Listen, I want to encourage you to go check out the Kobe documentary, check out Sneaker Hustle, and definitely go over to ESPN and check out Why Not Us. You'll definitely enjoy them. We are glad that she shared her perspective and shared such amazing words and experiences. And you see how busy she is. So it's definitely an honor to have her on. And I want to encourage you to honor the amazing women in your life. It's Women's History Month. International Women's Day has passed. But there's always an opportunity to be an ally, to be a part of the fight, and also to be in those conversations, to honor and acknowledge these amazing women. So we thank Sia once again of Savvy Media Group. Go check her out and make sure that you are getting up to speed and up to knowledge on the amazing accomplishments of women all around you. So I'll close like I always do. Listen, I can't help myself. Got to inspire. I've got to encourage. I've got to empower. But I can't help myself by being the absolute best version of myself. And guess what? You can too. So why not we do it together? We're out.